just be just that, although the matter I think is to a large extent already covered by the rules, I think just for safety purposes to make clear who must issue that writ. So that is the option at the bottom of option one, at the bottom of page three, if you turn around. Option two, there has been a proposal that we limit this execution process to high courts and magistrate courts. The point one of the commentators mentioned that there may be other legislation that also provide for execution processes. Now, we couldn't find anything like that, but the possibility, they refer to other courts or tribunals, for example, the Labour Court, Labour Appeal Court, tribunals. We couldn't find anything, but personally, I do not see any harm to play safe and include a provision that will say when option two be issued in terms of uniform rules of court. I'm a technical confused here. Sorry, Mr. Chief. In option two, option two is exactly the same as option one, except for the fact I do not indicate who must issue the writ. They will leave it open. It was just something that came to mind when I get the committee a choice between which of those two options the committee prefers. But Mr. Kabula confirmed that the High Court rules and Massive Court rules already indicate who must issue a writ or a warrant of execution.
Thanks, but remember the Rule 31.5, insofar as it relates to the order that has been issued by the registrar, which has just been found unconstitutional, unconstitutional. And therefore, Rule 46, we've got to read 45.1 with Johan referred to, where such power, that's why I left it open, is in the hands of the registrar or clerks of the court. Now, I'm not sure whether we want to make that specific thing in the light of the Rule 31.5.
So, Chair, if I'm not mistaken, I thought that judgment only related to immovable property being declared specially executable, not normal, not just issuing a writ. I think it was only applied when it was immovable property. Okay, so I mean, that's not necessarily going to apply here, but I do think it's not a bad idea to not specify, you know, in case things do change at some point, you know, rather to say as provided for in the rules of court. I think that probably is better.
Mine is the sort of principles I would go on is that legislation should be as easy as possible to read on its own. So you shouldn't have to keep referring to other documents. Who else currently can issue a writ of execution apart from a registrar and clerk of court?
The only one I can think of is the registrar of the Labour Court.
But it's registrar or clerk of the court.
Oh, right.
And the Labour Court, are you going to have state liability in the Labour Court?
Yes, you do. Yes.
For debt not paid?
Well, the Labour Court may
so
issue
salaries and things like that.
Well, a damages award or possibly a costs award.
But isn't the registrar of the Labour Court also registrar of the court? Okay, so we've got it as registrar or clerk of the court. is there anyone else then apart from a registrar or clerk of the court who can issue a writ? Then if not, why don't we put it in? The law changes later, or then it can be duly amended. So I sorry? Yeah.
Yeah, but I would
feel if I would feel from an ease of reading perspective more comfortable with it with the first option than the second option.
The third option will then be a combination, because we'll then, as far as the issuing is concerned, it's the same as option 2, except that we must know if we decide to mention it, then that point would have to be amended accordingly. What I've provided for here is that the also patentable prison that may be issued in terms of other acts and rules of, not necessarily rules of court, but terms of other acts and rules. I think the Law Society pointed out that apart from high courts and low courts, there might be other courts, like they have now confirmed. Labour appeal courts, I don't know whether
the Labour appeal court has its own rules or
not. Okay. So.
With three. Okay, so the difference here is any other act of Parliament or rule that provides for the issuing of a writ of execution or a warrant of execution against movable property owned by the state. What are these acts of Parliament? Or rules. I mean, you know, I hear the issue of the Labour Court, but then why not specify? I mean, what happens with the Labour Court? Are the uniform rules of the Labour Court? Are they not uniform rules of court?
The Labour Court has its own rules. You know, I'm not familiar with Labour Court rules, but they have their own rules.
So should we not specify Labour Court? Uniform rules of court, uniform rules of labour court, or whatever they're called, or the magistrates' court's rules. But I'm just worried that any other act of Parliament, or any rule, and nobody knows what exactly they are, just in case they do exist. I'm not that happy with that.
Surely this issue doesn't arise if we just stick to registrar or a clerk. I mean, is the Labour Court have a registrar as well? I know they do. So that would then apply to the Labour Court. So if we just stick to clerk or registrar and not go for the other two options, then wouldn't that solve that problem?
No, because if you look at option one, registrar or clerk of the court, a writ in terms of the uniform rules of court, or a warrant of execution in terms of the magistrates' court rules. So if it's Labour Court is not being covered, then it may be necessary to apply for there. But I would say put in Labour Court. But we don't need to be so vague and general.
I mean to say a registrar or clerk of any court.
Not the registrar, it's the later one.
I know. If we take that out rather, and say in the registrar or clerk of any court.
In terms of what?
Chair, I think it's simple. The technical advice has identified labour as another possible court. Let's put that in. Rather than yeah, into option one.
Do we have to specify labour court specifically? rather than say rules of the High Court. Rules of the High Court, which it will include the Labour Court as well. Yes.
Well, let me put it, ask it this way. Uniform rules of court. Does that include Labour Court rules?
So. Uniform rules of court applicable to High Court. The Labour Court, like the Constitutional Court, they've got their own rules. But if we use the word rules of the High Court, then we include the Labour Court there as well.
I don't think that's right, but it's not by saying any registrar or clerk of the court who is empowered to issue a writ or warrant of execution.
I also understand that the whole issue of the Labour Courts and the specialist courts are going to still be under discussion in the bills we still have to deal with. And there was there seemed to be some confusion as to whether they were going to be branches of the High Court or whatever. So maybe we should avoid potential problems there, and maybe that might be a wiser idea. Any clerk or registrar of any court empowered to issue a writ?
Sorry, just before we get on to that, then I had other changes I wanted to for, which we did raise earlier. I mean, it was discussed earlier, and that is that the other than property, the attachment and execution of which would severely disrupt service delivery, threaten life, or put the security of the public at risk, that gets changed to that basically the whether it's in 4A or whether it goes into another subsection, but that possibly that the regime being proposed is you can attach any property other than property where there is agreement between the sheriff and the accounting officer that the attachment and execution of that property would severely disrupt service delivery, threaten life, etc. So that's the first change. And then that the rest of it comes into where there's a dispute, where there isn't any agreement, that then gets dealt with under 8, which we can come to later. But the main point I wanted to make is the last part of 4, which is this sort of, which I think is too vague, that needs to be changed. So either we put a full stop after used by the department concerned, full stop, and delete the other than section and put that under somewhere else, or we say other than property agreed to by the sheriff and the accounting officer as the attachment and execution of which would severely disrupt service delivery. So it's a wording issue, but Chair, I think maybe to put it that because I think there was agreement earlier, and just to check whether there was, that the principle of what we're doing is that anything can be attached apart from where there is agreement between the sheriff and the accounting officer, this would disrupt service delivery. So whether it's under 4 or whether that is a full stop is put in and a new clause is put in, I prefer probably the new clause, because otherwise 4 becomes a bit clumsy. You've then got thrown into that Ms. Schaefer's point earlier, where her concern is that the sheriff, who's effectively representing the plaintiff, might agree too readily that this item may disrupt service delivery if it's attached. So I don't know how one deals with that. Maybe one leaves it as it is of disagreement between the sheriff and the accounting officer. And then in 8, where the parties can apply, you allow the plaintiff to dispute this agreement that the sheriff made on his or her behalf. I don't know. But Debbie, I'm pre-thinking your idea. Otherwise, I think I would be happy with just simply saying sheriff and the accounting officer or the representative of the department.
If there's no agreement,
then the sheriff can attach. And then the department's remedy is to come in under 8 and stop the execution. So it gets attached, but they can stop the execution later. So to my mind, it's weighted at this point in favor of the plaintiff. It's easier for them. But you prevent the long-term harm by allowing access into 8.
I also think.
Then,
you're smiling sweetly at Mr. Lavaskaki, and he's smiling sweetly back at you. What is going to be done then? Are we leaving it up to him to decide? I mean, if I put out the principle clear enough, you will then look at whether it should be an amendment to 4, this agreement between the two parties, or whether you put a full stop after department concerned and put the agreement into another sub-clause. Are we leaving that up to you?
Chairperson, I will draft options there, but those are basically the accounts.
Listen, the reason I'm smiling is because I serve on another committee where if we had gone through this exercise, the person drafting would have said, now tell me what is it that you want actually. So, you know, I've always had this admiration for people from justice that, you know, they can listen to us, go away, and then come back and present us with a draft. And
my
concern is that if you know, this is the 7 a.m. document, which means that Mr. Lavaskakni didn't sleep. So, I hope he's following enough.
I think it's also going to depend on how we try and resolve the issue of when there isn't sufficient property, because we'll double cross that bridge when we get to it. Yeah, because I do think we need to. I mean, I do have a very big concern about making plaintiffs first of all have to sue the department if, you know, get judgment, go through all the hassle, then still have to try and prove why the sheriff's not doing its job, if it's not, you know, which he may or may not be doing. And I just think that this whole thing, if we make it too complicated and have to go back to court too many times, it could end up still severely prejudicing the plaintiff, and that they don't actually end up getting their money any quicker, which gave rise to this whole situation in the first place.
Paragraph B suggests that we should add in subsection 8, the words, and the court may grant such a stay on terms that promote such interest, he added now that,
I mean,
does the court not automatically have the power to make a will of what it did?
No, it seems to be something.
But if we decide to retain those, or to give effect to this proposal, then we will also have to amend it in line with the way that I have to amend subsection 8 now. Where Mr. Jeffrey said we must link that to the exclusions, if I can call it that way. So that will then probably require further amendment. I don't know whether my colleagues want to add, the board wise, I want to add on the necessity of including those words.
Can I recall that you just, and then they can respond as well, because I don't
see, I mean, I don't see the point of D. You set out the grounds on which you can apply. So isn't it obvious that the court may agree with you and therefore they will grant the stay in terms of the way the application was made? So I just don't see the point of D. It's nonsensical. You may apply for an order. You may apply for a rescission of judgment if you were not properly notified of the application being made to court. The court may grant you a rescission of judgment if it was satisfied that you were not properly notified. I mean, it just is belts and braces, and so basically bottom line, and maybe then to add to Mr. Labuschagne's question, can the state attorney, state law advisor, tell us whether D is in fact necessary or whether Danae's rates were off somewhere else at the time?
Is it not on terms that promote such interests that the key words? I'm just asking.
So the court must grant on terms that promote your justice.
They're not here, so I would rather ask them.
But he was asking, state law, state attorney.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if we look at A says that a party having a direct and material interest may, okay, we're going to remove the other words, apply to the court which granted the order for a stay on grounds that the execution of the attached movable property is not in the interest of justice. So that application will be considered on the grounds whether it will be on the interest of justice to execute that particular movable property, Chair. And then D, you say the same thing, a court which grants application referred to in paragraph A may stay the execution on such terms which, in the opinion of the court, are in the interest of justice. Right. So A and B, Chair, are saying, basically, Chair, they are giving the court the power to make that decision based on the interest of justice. That's the way I interpret A and B, Chair, and D.
Can I suggest we, unless anybody else is of a counter view, that we drop the D, because looking at the Danae's rate submission, it's a single page, and it is, we suggest that you add to section 7 the words, and the court may grant such stay on terms that promotes that interest, full stop. There's no real motivation or anything. There's nothing for us really to look at, and I don't understand it.
So it was my initial reaction, but now that the Chair pointed out the terms issue, I think maybe there may be a point if they're granted on terms that promote such interests. It's not actually saying, as I initially read it, it's not in the interest of justice. I mean, they can, obviously they can grant the stay. But their proposal is that it must be granted on those terms that promote whatever, to remedy that. Yeah. Yeah, but it's, the way I see it is it could be trying to rectify that situation. So the thing is, I mean, for example, I don't know, what could be in the interest of justice? Okay, somebody said earlier, if there's a rescission application, it'll be stayed until the hearing of the rescission application, although I suppose they could do that anyway. Yeah.
Summary document, page 4. VB, the first bullet, I just want to confirm whether what I've stated there is correct, that you can't execute this under the response, that you cannot execute against property of another department. Okay? Page 5 of the long document, right at the bottom. Should only take place if the payment is not satisfied, or if there is no agreement between it. And at the moment, it's and. So, in other words, so that's the motivation for that one. So basically, it's only and substitute with or. Top of page 6, Jefferson. To be honest, that proposal appears to me to have merit, but I have not yet applied my mind to draft an amendment giving effect. This is again, for example, the fruit issue. Basically, instead of attached, say for example, a vehicle full of bananas. Attached, sell, attached, remove, sell, and then keep the money in this trust account. If the state then make use of subsection 8, then the sheriff must give that money back to the state. So that is what it, according to me, or how I understand that proposal.
think it's unduly overcomplicated. The property is still, even though it's been attached, is still that of the state. So if it is crates of bananas that have been attached, that are then going to have to sit there for the 30 days, the state can under 8 apply for the thing to be changed if necessary. But I think we've got to. I like Mr. Labuschagne, although the proposal appears to have merit, well, it's unlikely, and I think it's too much of a belts and braces attempt from Standard Bank, and I think it's just going to make the whole thing quite a lot more complicated. And I think there are other remedies if perishables are attached and the state wants to have them released.
So basically,
in short, I support nothing being done on, no change to 3.5 in that regard.
Just not sure what other property could be materially diminished. I mean, there may be situations, but I'm not sure that's within 30 days. I mean, you know, obviously if things sit outside in the sun and so on, you know, that kind of thing, it could be some potential damage, perhaps, if it's going to be longer than 30 days. So I don't know, maybe we must just flag it and rethink a bit. It doesn't have to be a very complicated provision. It can just be if it's materially diminished in value, then, or if it's perishable goods.
That we don't do that, but that any member who has a wonderful idea, so we don't automatically relook at it, but if obviously if any member has a wonderful idea and proposal for how it should be changed, then they can come with that.
Are a few remarks or proposals as to the scope of the definition of state. It only applies to national and provincial departments. There's a proposal that local government should be included. There's a proposal that we should make this bill applicable to all organs of state as defined in Section 239 of the Constitution. So, personally, and in view of the judgment of Inyati, which only refers to national and provincial, that must be kept in mind when we when the committee decides on the scope of the definition of state. At the moment, I've drafted a definition of state, which only includes national and provincial departments. That is on page 6. It only includes the national and provincial departments.
We went through this, and I understand that the reason is because there is provision already made in local government legislation for execution. Could we maybe just have that section in the local whatever act it is, and just have a look and see if there's any material difference? I don't know if it necessarily makes a difference whether it is or not, but just for our own information to see whether it is similar to what we're doing. But I mean, I didn't think, you know, if the judgment wasn't concerned with local government because it is provided for, then I don't think we really need to include it here.
I agree with that, but then what about then parastatals? Not parastatals necessarily, but other organs of state. So you go hiking in Kiwi Mfolozi with Izimbero KZN Wildlife, which is a organ of state, you get eaten by a lion, you know, and the state won't pay. Loss of support. You know, can you sue, can you attach Izimbelo? Can you attach the Mfolozi Game Reserve? No, you can't, it's immovable, but I'm wandering off. Parastatals and other organs of state, what happens with them? And what is the law governing them at the moment?
I think we won't be able to escape the definition of state that, one, it includes all three levels of government, including municipalities. What we need to look at is organs of state as defined in Section 239 of the Constitution. But then, as defined 239 in terms of the Constitution. But then, from an implementation point of view, taking into account once again that some of the parastatals, particularly local government, we don't get involved in their litigation, and therefore to ensure compliance in terms of satisfaction of judgment standing in money is going to be a big challenge for us. Because what justification would you have by only referring to department which is an organ of state in itself, only at provincial and national level? What recourse do you have, or what remedy are you going to provide for litigants who are suing local municipalities, which is also an organ of state?
The problem is the bill as it is. Okay, State Liability Act is state. Okay, claims against the state, and there's no definition of state. But then under point two, it's proceedings to be taken against the minister of department concerned, and that is then being changed to, in this bill, to executive authority of department. An executive authority, in terms of the definition of the act, clearly specifies that it relates to national and provincial. Okay, and there's no provision in this bill for local government, and the reason for that is that we, our understanding is that it's covered elsewhere, and that's what Mr. Lovascocchi has asked to provide us with Ms. Schaefer's point. So the issue then becomes: so this bill, as it stands, does not appear to apply to local government. And to, well, the Act doesn't appear to apply to local government or organs of state. The bill doesn't. If local government is covered, what happens to organs of state?
Have a local government, because it's already covered by another Act.
Yes.
And if you can't now make a legislation that's going to contradict that Act, which is
yes.
why I asked for a copy
yes.
of that provision.
Okay. But the issue then is, what about organs of state other than national and provincial departments?
I must say, I don't think they're part of the state. Well, I always understood, and under the old Westminster Constitution, yeah, the law advisors may be able to help better, the state was national government and provincial government, and you could therefore execute against municipalities because they weren't part of the state. But a parastate such as ESCOM is not the state.
But if you think of the definition of organ of state in the Constitution, it's quite wide.
definition of organ of state covers what Chapter 9 institution. So it's very wide.
Somewhere along the line or whatever, but I will make them available again. Then to my Service Act defines it the same. Under the department includes national government component. Now, national government component is just for page 3. Contains a list of 47, approximately 70 listed entities, which at the moment I don't think the State Liability Act applies to those issues. So that's another, in my definition, I have not definition of a national department and provincial department. I have not included government components, but the PFMA as well as the public service, under their definition of department, those government components are included. Yeah. If we must look at page 3 of the long document, right at the bottom, I've quoted those provisions in a footnote. I've quoted those provisions of the PFMA and of the public service.
Could you ask the state attorney's office? There must be claims against ESCOM. There must be claims against Paris Staples. What happens when there are currently? What happens?
We never see them. We don't act on behalf of them. They go to private attorneys. They can't, unlike service on the state, you can effect service on the state or the minister or premier at the office of the state attorney. You cannot effect service on a parastatal at the state attorney. So we don't know anything about the litigation. We never see it.
So one could say that currently then everybody accepts that the parastatals are not covered by the State Liability Act. That you do not use that system.
That was always my understanding.
Yes, okay. So, Chair, look, I really don't see the need to change that. And the IT specified national and provincial departments. I think if we want to, I regard the state as you know, envisaged in the Constitution, including organs of state. But if the general acceptance of the State Liability Act that is that the parastatals are not covered and nobody's raised any problems, why fix what we don't even know whether it's broken? So I think it's a question of let's leave out then, let's not make any changes, let's keep it as you know, looking at a definition of national and provincial department. Now, it would seem that these entities in the PFMA, Mr. Labuschagne, are they not also some of them, many of them, parastatals? And if they're parastatals, are we not better off with your own definition of using the Public Service Act?
Just as a matter of fact, now that I've again looked at the definition in the public government, PFMA, it refers to, there is a definition of national government components as listed in the Public Service Act. I'm quickly trying to get out. So it's not the ones listed in the PFMA, it's the ones listed in the Public Service Act. I'm just trying to find, I think I'll do it copy. I'll just find it.
Jim, I worry with PFMA is it's around accounting for public money. Okay, which is important. Public, the component would be public money that's been paid into an entity and being able to account for that, which is correct. But when one talks about state liability, it's a different issue. And there I think we really do mean the national and provincial departments. I've lost track of how many national departments we have now. But it would be, I mean, they get gazetted, and I think that gazette is in terms of the Public Service Act. You know, so for example, we now have a Department of Minerals and a Department of Energy, that recent gazette. And if that, so yeah, I think that's what we follow. And then similarly on a provincial level, that we limit it and we don't look at fixing what we don't know whether it's broken or not.
Although I accept that the Nyati issue came as a result of responsibility of the provincial national government, but Judge Mukhoro, paragraph 29, the judgment says, similarly, the Constitution provides that an order or decision by a court binds all persons to whom an organ of state to which it applies. Now, although we can exclude the application of this law with respect to local government, but the order that has been made in respect of this Nyati judgment, it binds all organs of state. That's the difficulty that I have.
So where is that?
Paragraph 29 of Mukhoro judgment. Goes further, the Constitution further places an obligation upon the public administration, which local government exercises public power, which encompasses a value-based public service, to be accountable.
Yeah, but if you look at the order itself, point 3A, the final order against the National Provincial Department for the payment of money. I mean, her order is about national and provincial.
Or local government. A, if a final order against the state for the payment of money is not satisfied within 30 days of the judgment, the judgment creditor may serve notice on the state attorney or the relevant accounting officer in the national, provincial, or local government.
Relevant national provincial treasury, the state attorney, the accounting officer of the relevant national provincial department.
It's the original judgment from the Constitutional Court. I'm not sure which version you have.
I've got the October 2009 one. Fifty-three of nine,
yeah, heard on the 12th of August. The order is made on the 1st of June and 31st of August.
Reason for order, the supplementary order delivered on the 9th of October.
Yeah, some of the orders made, this one that I'm referring to was made on 31st of August 2009.
But this is the later one.
But if you read on page 16 of the judgment in its entirety, you will see she tried to summarize the order that she made, the interim order.
Yes, but that's then she then makes a new order, and the new order does not include local. Okay, we go with the latter one.
I think it was Mr. Radman who said that the court itself had limited that to provincial and national. They left out local government on the
side. I mean, if it was an interim order and she referred to local, and in the final order she didn't refer to local, I think that in itself is quite telling. I mean, she clearly intended to do that.
I think you're right. I withdraw. Right, there was an initial order.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. On paragraph 39. I mean, she covers it under 39, which is on page 22. A reservation was made by the ALP and the FUL, I'm not sure who they are, concerns the inclusion of an attachment and execution of procedure against property of the local government in the proposed order. This inclusion, they correctly point out, is unnecessary, as Section 3 of the State Liability Act does not regulate the execution of judgment debts against local government. I need say nothing further about this. So she deliberately left out local government.
Sorry, and we're not going to include government components. Because I've found the Public Service Act, Jefferson. The definition of national government component in the PFMI refers to part 3 of part I of Section 3 to the Public Service Act. Public Service Act, there are 6 national government components. Center for Public Service Innovation, Concept, Government Printing Works, Intelligence Academy, National Intelligence Agency, South African Secret Service. Those are government components.
The last three lines, it's debatable whether that exists. And all the concept of it is. I don't know.
Chair, I'm happier with the government departments, national departments listed in the regulations for the Public Service Act. So basically everyone, everything with a director general. Correct, yeah, I haven't got the PS, the Public Service Act, but is Mr., is that not, as Mr. Lavaskakny has put it, Schedule 1 of the Public Service Act? I don't think we should be making any reference to the PFMA, because that's about something different, which is about the correct use of state funds. Ask with the three definitions, national, provincial, and state. You put in a definition of you've still got executive authority. Okay. Got the accounting officer, that's from the original act in terms of the PFMA. Now you've got state, so everybody then knows what the State Liability Act applies to. There's a national provincial department listed in Schedules 1 or 2 to the Public Service Act 1994. Presumably that is subject to the renewals that get issued. So the numbers of departments change. We now have in 94 we had the Department of Mineral and Energy, we now have the Department of Mineral, we have the Department of Energy, we've got two, that's in terms of the proclamation. So that's the first question, but why do we need to define national department or provincial department if you provided a definition of state? State means national provincial department, listed in Schedules 1 or 2, the Public Service Act. What's the point of having your definition of national department and provincial department? Because you're basically just saying national department is Schedule 1 and provincial department is Schedule 2, and the Premier actually falls under province, but he or she is in Schedule 1. But I see it as an unnecessary overlap, providing this definition of national and provincial when you have a definition of state. So in short, I'm supporting the definition of state. It'll then clear it all up and it states what state is, but I don't see why you need to define national and provincial department. Does have any view on it? I mean, I just, yeah. Rather than just put Mr. Lubberskutney being in the hot seat the whole time.
Can we agree we'll stop at 4?
Yeah.
Half past 3?
I'm fine.
No, we can stop at half past 3.
Why don't we stop when we get to the end of, I don't know, this section or a section? Because, I mean, my worry is we don't have Treasury. We've got Mr. Lubberskutney who I don't think has had any sleep. Yeah, whenever, yeah. I'm trying to be helpful.
It's not that bad, but it's...
Thank you, Chairperson. We agree with the proposal because, I mean, if you look at the bill that's currently in front, there's only a reference to state and department. And if state is defined to include national and provincial, and that is quite enough. If it's nowhere used, then you don't need to define provincial or national. Thank you, Jim.
I'm quite happy with the fact that we then delete the definitions of national and provincial government. I'm happy. I don't think, as everybody has pointed out, it won't make a difference because the definition of state already refers to where you're going to find it, the department. So I don't think it's I will give it some more thought. But then for the meantime, I'm not going to delete it, but for the meantime, we're not going to support it.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. A few commentators made certain proposals in respect of the definition of final court order. They said, for example, definition of final court order does not provide for a situation where a department takes a judgment on review. It does not provide for what they call consent orders, in other words, where the creditor and the debtor, before without going to court, agrees and say, all right, I will pay you, say, $1 million. They sign such an agreement. But that is, and nobody must know, help me, I think that is only valid if that agreement has been made and order of court. So again, we also do not cater for that situation as far as final court order is concerned. Those are issues that came out later. You'll see there that I've indicated it still needs some further research, and that is one of the reasons why I've again asked the state attorney and able to be present so that they are in practice, they know what situations we should cover under the definition of final court order.
I can just say a consent order is a final order if it finally disposes of the issues between the parties. So I don't see their problem actually.
No, the Atmahoro order, paragraph 3b, is not included in the bill, as far as I can see, which is, and it's linked to this issue of the final order, the court order served on the officials must be accompanied by a certificate by the registrar or clerk of the court, certifying that no appeal, review, or rescission proceedings are pending in respect thereof. Okay, why is that not in the bill? Because that's linked to the final. It basically, she's put in a mechanism to provide for the fact that there's no there's nothing pending, therefore is a final court order. Whereas it just seems within the bill that the person can, as long as it's a final order, and do we know what, I don't know what a final order is. I'm not talking about where there's consent, I'm talking about oh here it is, okay. Given or confirmed, okay, you put it in the definition. Given or confirmed by a court of final instance, or given by another court where the time for noting of an appeal against the order has expired, no appeal has been lodged, provided that where court grants condemnation of late lodging an appeal, an order given or confirmed by the court hearing such appeal. So you've confined it to appeals and the time limits. So what are the time limits for appeals? But then what about rescissions? You've left out rescissions.
B, paragraph B, is that the judgment creditor must at that stage, before it gets a final court order, that the judgment debtor has no intention of bringing all those applications, what we may refer to as interlocutory applications. And the final court order is to say there are no other proceedings pending, and therefore the judgment is final. That's what B seeks to achieve, that get a certificate on top of the order that has been made. In other words, that certificate must be accompanied by the order issued by the registrar. That's what B says.
So that's B of Mokoro's order.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. But that's not, there's no requirement for a certificate in terms of the bill. Okay, what has been done is that under the definition of final court order, it's an order that where given by another court where the time for noting an appeal has expired and no appeal has been lodged. So it's largely left up to, no one's got to give a certificate, there's no appeal pending. So that's the first problem. I mean, the Mokoro system provided for somebody had to certify that this is final. In the bill, you've just got to hope. Okay? I don't know who checks whether it's final or not. And then what about the issue of rescission? Because we've seen from Mr. Gawula's report earlier that rescission comes in applications for rescission of judgment, you know, where there's a wrong judgment and you want it set aside. So you're not appealing, but it's wrong because they gave the judgment, default judgment against the wrong person. So it's not an appeal. Why is rescission not provided for? So it would be to I think Mr. Labuschagne particularly, because you drafted this, didn't you? Yeah. Why did you not follow Mokoro? And isn't there a problem with the way it's drafted that rescission is out and nobody has to actively certify that there's nothing pending, as was the case with Mokoro?
The same applies to review, and I mean, I know that has been raised by the Premier, so maybe we'll get to that tomorrow, but I mean, that point has also been made that there hasn't been provision made for if the state wants to take the judgment on review also within the specified time.
Well, if this goes back, I mean, court orders, appeal, review or rescission.
So just to be honest, I don't know whether we at any stage had such a provision in, and if so, at what stage was it deleted? I don't have an answer for that.
I mean, look, yeah, it just might not have been in the bill, but it was in the judgment on which the bill is based. So it must have been looked at by somebody, because my feeling is I like the Mokoro order. I would rather have seen that B in the Mokoro order, whereby it includes appeal, review, and rescission. I mean, rescission and review, and then, unlike the bill as it is at the moment, where you've just got a summa hope that it's up to good faith, you know, that maybe the by the attorney. Acting for the applicant to allege that this is a final order, their good faith. Whereas the registrar or the clerk of the court just has to hope, or the sheriff, that this is the case. Whereas with the Makoto order, you've actually got to get the certificate. And I think from Mr. Gawula's report, you can't just rely on... I mean, the problem was, in terms of his report, is that paragraph B of the Makoto order is not followed. And if it had been followed, some of those problems could have been avoided. Now we want to abolish paragraph B altogether. I'm worried.
Can I just say something? Is the certificate accompanied by the order not a confirmation, or that certificate confers a status of that order as being a final court order?
But there's no certificate in the bill.
Do you need a certificate in the bill, especially taking into account that, given a confirmed by a court of a final instance, when there's a court of final instance, it means there are no other applications that can be brought in any other court, because the court of final instance has made that order, and that order has the effect of a final order. I don't know what comes, whether you've got a different interpretation to that.
Sorry, the problem's not about the court of final instance. The problem is about B. Any other court, not a court of final instance, which is going to be in most cases. And how are you going to know that there's no application for appeal, review, or rescission
to another court?
I think in the normal course of an order, given there's a specific time upon which you ought to bring... you've got to bring a review application or lodge an appeal or a rescission of that. It's time bound. Now, at what stage would the applicant be satisfied that none of those interlocutory applications are going to be brought? And even if the period is expired, you can then bring an application for continuation and present, put to the court, reasons why your application is late. The condemnation application. I don't know, Mr. Wilkins, whether you...
I like the Magoro order because it does place an onus on the applicant's attorney to do something. I'm not saying that the attorneys act responsibly, but sometimes they act out of ignorance and do things they shouldn't. And that, I like...
Do they waive their rights in bringing any application? That's
the question. An application is not time bound in the sense that, although the rules may stipulate when it should be brought, things may always happen later on which justify bringing an application out of time. In fact, I remember the magistrates' court rules for rescission. There are even different periods for an ordinary rescission has to be brought, I think, within 6 weeks. And if there was fraud or so on, you can bring it within a year. And so there are even different periods. And I don't think it could be suggested that the chappie who is now waiting for his money should now wait for a whole year until the answer. So I think all that is required is that the certificate be given that no application for review or decision is pending at this stage.
As it's worded at the moment, it is the time for noting an appeal, we will just add in there, review or rescission, has against the judgment or order has been lodged. Or has expired and no appeal whatever has been lodged. So we just add in no appeal, review or rescission has been lodged. I mean, and the fact of the matter is really, I think the certificate is a good idea, that the attorney can just say, we certify that as at this stage there has been no appeal application, rescission or review application lodged at the court. So I don't think it's a problem with the certificate, and I can't imagine that would bind the attorney not to ever put in an appeal if they felt like it later, if circumstances later on showed that the client wanted to put in an appeal. It's not saying that they're not intending to ever put in an appeal. Maybe the client comes back later and says, we've got good reasons to put in a late appeal, and we'll put in a late appeal. I mean, it is also dealing there with, provided that we're a court thereafter grants condemnation for the late lodging of an appeal, an order given or confirmed by the court hearing such appeal. So that is also provided for you. So I think if we just add in the appeal, the review, and the rescission, the review and the rescission, and add in the certificate by the attorney, and we just make it very clear that that's not going to waive any right that the client has, then that should surely be all right.
I mean, just as you point out, in terms of the court order, the certificate is not by the attorney, it's by the registrar or the clerk, which is better, because then they're not implying that they're not going to... Well, you've got to get the attorney from the other... You've got to get the certificate from the other side. I mean, it's not workable, okay? This is the so the defendant has to, you've got to get from their attorney, that's out. The issue would be, so it should still be a certificate from the registrar or the clerk, okay, that as of this time, there's no appeal review rescission proceedings pending. I think the issue is going to come in that what happens then if the defendant wakes up and decides... So after the 30-day period has elapsed, the applicant has got the plaintiff has got the certificate from the registrar. They then try and attach goods. The defendant then says, "Oops, this was wrong. This was a mistake," and they then start to appealing or applying for rescission. Now, obviously, you can't attach in that case, I would have thought. I mean, I suppose it's up to the court to decide. And hopefully, if we improve the systems and get the state attorney more involved in the beginning, hopefully it won't happen. But, that's a scenario. Mr. Wilkins, looked like you wanted to say something.
I just want to say... The attachment may already have been made, but you have the opportunity to bring that application for the stay. So that will be, yeah.
But yeah, and I think
if I'm correct, then what we are saying is we want Judge Mokoro's paragraph B put into the bill rather than dealing with it by way of a definition of final court order. I don't know if I'm correct on that. Maybe we want to think about it more. But I don't think Debbie seemed to be going more for putting in a certificate under the definition of final court order, whereas I prefer the Mokoro's paragraph B as going into the body of the Act.
To be separate. I mean, we need to change final court order to include the rescission in the review, and then maybe and then have the certificate as a separate thing. I think that is better.
Mr. Jeffrey, I'm just thinking the issue of the certificate, its value, taking into account that the judgment debtor can wake up, as you said, after having studied the order and bring whether an appeal or review or rescission application in that, because the clerk of the court or the registrar at the time the order was made and served on that official, he can only satisfy himself at that time. After that, he can't give any guarantees what the reaction of the judgment debtor would be. Now, I'm just thinking of the value of that with respect to a final court order. After all those, the appeal, the review, or rescission application has been brought, what the effect of that certificate?
I think
it's sort of easy. You can't, if you don't have that certificate, you can't then proceed with attachments. Okay? So if you know it, the onus then is on the plaintiff to check whether there's any application, and if there is such an application, you can't proceed. You've got to wait for the thing to go. What it wants to avoid is a situation where and it seems in terms of Mr. Gawula's report to be happening, where a plaintiff's attorneys go ahead and try and start attaching when they know that an application for rescission, for example, is in. So I like it as a requirement. I think it adds value.
While we're on this point, on page 28 of my long document, they are referred to section 78 of the Magistrates Courts Act. I think maybe while we're on this debate, we must keep that provision also in mind. The footnote right at the bottom. I see that, understand that provision is that despite the fact that an appeal has been lodged, the court may still make an order and say, but this person needs money because he needs, for example, hospital treatment, and you may proceed with, despite the fact that there's an appeal or review, whatever, and not the final court order yet, the court may give any correction. So, I don't know, commentator, as a matter of fact, went so far to say that we should include that provision also in the bill.
I'm sorry, I don't have the Makura judgment with me, so I might be off base here, but I mean, as far as I recall, clerks and registrars are the ones who issue the bond execution, right? So you're saying that they've got to issue themselves a certificate before they can issue the warrant? I mean, it doesn't make sense, actually, when you think about it. I mean, they will have the court file there, surely. I mean, and if the provision says after the time period has expired for lodging an appeal or review, then they will have that information available to them in the court file. So, in effect, they're going to be giving themselves a certificate to issue a warrant themselves. Am I wrong?
I still have difficulties to find value for this certificate, especially taking into account that you can even bring an application before sale of security or during sale of execution of the property after it had been long attached. And that's a difficulty that I have. Take into account that the register of the court of the clerk can only satisfy himself by wearing that certificate at a particular point in time. That's the difficulty that I have.
Christine just given me a copy of the order. I mean, it says the order served on the official referred to must be accompanied by a certificate by the registrar. But surely if we impose the obligation on the registrar or clerk that they may not issue that warrant until, you know, unless they are satisfied at the time that there are no appeals, reviews or rescissions pending, surely that should be sufficient.
I am beginning to question the wisdom of the Honourable Judge. Yeah. But Chair, just sorry, just on the point, just trying to get it to, I mean, if we do go back then towards the definition of a definition of final court order, then what are the periods? What are the periods for appeal, review, and rescission? But if we can get that tomorrow, because I don't know if you do want to give a 30-day period for the one difference for with the Mokoro judgment and the Mokoro order is, and I suspect that she's shortened it. It's 30 days after the judgment. You can then start your procedures to attach, which may still be within the time when you can appeal or apply for rescission or have the thing taken on review. But if you limit it to the date of appeals has finished, how long do you have to appeal?
I can't recall. I think it's 20 days or something.
20 days.
It's court days, so it's about a month. That's about a month then when you think it out.
Yeah. And then rescission, you say there's different times.
Rescission of the magistrate's court. Normally it's, yeah, normally 6 weeks. No, rescission would be normally like where there's a default judgment comes to your knowledge, reasons you'd ask for when you know there's a judgment and you want these reasons.
I'm talking about the differences in time periods between when you note your, you've got, there's different times where you note your appeal and prosecute your appeal, and then you have to get reasons for judgment in between. So we need to just make sure we get the clarity on all those time periods.
I mean, this is an SMS from our caucus. I see we have a study group tomorrow afternoon as well. I mean, it's you and me are the only people from the caucus here. But I would want to suggest that. I mean, look, if we can finish tomorrow, great. But if we can't, I think we should still meet. I doubt if members have made provision to fly out tomorrow night, particularly because of the study group, and I would want to suggest we still meet Thursday morning. Yeah. But maybe speak to the Chief Whip. I don't know if it affects the other parties, but maybe just speak to the Chief Whip's office in terms of the time pressure we're up to under.
I'm not sure what that meant. Sorry.